back together again on a Tuesday, February 14th, 2023 edition of Connecticut Today on WICC. We highlighted a pair of high-profile juvenile crimes to talk about. Fine Fettle's COO, Benjamin Zaks, talked about the first month of Connecticut's retail recreational marijuana sales. Quinnipiac University Associate Professor Dr. John Powers discussing the state of Connecticut possibly prohibiting the use of TikTok on state-issued digital devices. You know, I try as best as I can not to be the bearer of doom and gloom. And a lot of the stuff we talk about here on the show is admittedly not happy news. It's not the kind of thing where you hear me, or frankly, me or Melissa in the morning here, or Lisa Wexler every Monday through Friday from 10 to noon, first part of the midday. You know, we tend to talk about stuff out of habit or otherwise, that you hear and you say, well, geez, again? And part of us as hosts, you know, are always asking ourselves, you know, is this worth mentioning? Because, you know, sometimes tedium in this media, in talk radio too, like all others, you know, it can build in. You're trying to create something compelling, especially at the start of a show. But then you say to yourself, yeah, you have to talk about this stuff, because not only do you think your listeners and the folks who, the men and women who follow your show or shows on a station think they want to hear it, but people have to hear it. There's, you know, there's just stuff going on that you have to highlight to people, even if it may ruffle a few feathers. And again, we start with this today. We start with two stories that are circulating on local media about crime, and you hear more and more of this, and it's not just that you have to ask yourself, well, you know, is this being overreacted to, or why are we talking about this? No, it's because the people involved say it's getting worse. Let's take case number one. And again, this has to do with, and again, this is not to, you know, hammer a certain institution or a certain city or town. But again, today's story by Carolyn Tien, I believe that's how her name is spelled, in the Connecticut Insider, teen car thieves caught after trying to elude officers in the Trumbull Mall. Elude officers, I should say, in the Trumbull Mall. What is it about, and I'm kind of asking this rhetorically, but, you know, rarely do you go more than 3 or 4 days without seeing or hearing, you know, whether it's in print or here on the station or online or on, you know, local cable, News 12 or whatever, about something happening connected to the Trumbull Mall. And we've talked about this on and off and on again and off again and on again, and people in Trumbull are very sensitive to this, and I understand that. But what's the answer here? So again, let me get into each one of these stories. We'll start here in Trumbull, and it's troubling. Now, look, there's been car larceny. There's been grand theft auto for years. Sometimes young people do it. But it's the little details in this story that drive you crazy. And you hear them, or you read them, and you say to yourself, what? Really? Two teen car thieves were apprehended after they tried to run from officers through the mall on Monday afternoon, all this according to Trumbull Police. The boys, 16 years old, from Bridgeport, were charged with first-degree larceny, interfering with police, and disorderly conduct. Now, here's the thing that I'm telling you has got to get changed. I don't know how you do it. Again, every time I do stories like this, I make an effort to tell you, I am not an authority in criminal justice. I am not an authority in the penal code. I am not an authority in the judicial branch of this state. I know nothing of the sort. But what I do know is I keep hearing and seeing and reading stuff that just makes you wonder, why, what is the extra step we're missing here? What do I mean? Well, here you go. Two boys, both 16 from Bridgeport, who were charged with, as I said, first-degree larceny, interfering with police, and disorderly conduct. They were released to the custody of their parents on a promise to appear in court. Okay, so that's point one. We have got to come up with a middle level. Look, there's got to be a middle level between just releasing these kids. And make no mistake, they're kids. I know they're juveniles. They can be as old as, you know, 17 and 364 days. I get it. But they're juveniles. They're kids. Think about yourself at 17, 16, 15, 14. Would you have ever thought of doing this stuff? But yet we catch people like this in their young years, knowing that they might be taking a fork in the road coming up pretty soon where they go one side, they'll have productive lives, and they take the other fork, the left or the right side of the fork, and they go down that path of being a lifetime criminal. Maybe. You don't know. I don't want to overemphasize this, but you really don't know. So why are these juvenile suspects, shall we say, why are they released into the custody of the parents? I don't understand. Where is that middle level that we should have between releasing them to the custody of their parents and locking them up immediately, neither one making any real sense to me? Where is that middle step or that alternative where we call the parents and we say, yeah, you know what, your son's in trouble or your daughter's in trouble, whatever, son, daughter, they're 16 years old. Here's what we caught them doing. We will give them back to you in a day or so. But we think they should be, we are keeping them in custody. Today's Monday, ma'am. You'll get them back on Wednesday. We have a facility where we need to talk to them. Or maybe you can come down and tell them they have to stay here. But this whole thing about being released to the custody of their parents, is that doing any good? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Trumbull Police. Now, this story, there's a couple of other things here that we should let you know here. And you know, whatever you think of this thing, what would you do if you were king or queen? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So here you have two 16-year-old boys from Bridgeport charged with first-degree larceny, interfering with police, and disorderly conduct, and they get released back to mom and dad. Do you think that they're in any way worried, scared? I don't know. They went home, apparently, after the cops got them. I guess they went home. Okay, now, we're not even done with this one yet. You know how we've been telling you that if you have a certain year Kia or Hyundai, you're kind of a sitting duck because of this video that's been circulating on social media, mainly TikTok, about how to use a USB cable to steal a car. Well, police were notified around 1 p.m. Monday that a 2021 Kia Sportage that was reported stolen to New Haven police on February 1 had been located at the Trumbull Mall. That's according to police. When inspected, here you go, kids, I'm telling you, if you have a Kia or you have a Hyundai, call your dealer and ask them, is my car one of the ones that's being stolen? When inspected, the Kia was found to have sustained significant damage to the steering column. Investigators also noted that a USB cable was connected to the ignition system. There you go. So we have two 16-year-old boys from Bridgeport who were, you know, jockeying around in a stolen car, one of those cars that is very easy to steal, very easy to lift, through just a USB cable. And here's what, before we go to break, here's the one that's going to make your head explode. As if it being two 16-year-olds who were returned to their parents, you know, isn't enough, as if the fact that they're using this USB cable to steal certain Kias and Hyundais, as if that isn't enough. You ready for this? The pièce de résistance, the frosting, frosting on the cake here. One of the suspects, you ready for this? One of the suspects was wearing an ankle monitor stemming from a prior arrest. One of the subjects, and I'm going by just what the media reports say here, one of the subjects, the suspects rather, was wearing an ankle monitor stemming from a prior arrest. They arrest two 16-year-olds on Monday with a stolen vehicle, stolen through this TikTok challenge using just a USB cable in the Trumbull Mall. They arrest two of the kids, and they were, according to this report, they were released to the custody of their parents. One of the ones was already wearing an ankle monitor stemming from a previous arrest. They were due sometime today to appear in Bridgeport Juvenile Court. Now, are we going to get serious about juvenile offenders or what? Look, I don't know the specifics of this case any more than the media reports. But you know what? Thousands of people are reading and ingesting this story today as I am. And what do they see? 16-year-olds released to the custody of their parents, and at least one of them is already wearing an ankle monitor from a previous arrest. Says here, where are the parents? Are there any parents? I know there are biological parents in the sense of, you know, insert part A into part B and let's watch what happens. I get that. Where are mom and dad? Are mom and dad even around? And again, I understand there are parents who are trying their best, parents, grandparents, I get that. But are we serious here? You know, sometimes people can try their best and the state or the government has to step in and say, okay, we understand, but we need to take an extra step here. So one of the juveniles already was wearing an ankle monitor, according to Trumbull Police, from a prior arrest. I guess that monitor worked. Ooh. That ankle monitor, that put the fear of God into him. Back at it again with you on Connecticut Today, right here on WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, and online at WICC600.com. We're about a month into recreational marijuana sales in the state. Now, the retail locations owned by individuals, many of those have still not opened yet. In fact, none of them have. Not sure what the timeline is for that, but the outlets that do sell the medical marijuana, they've been serving the retail market for about the past month, and we thought it a good idea to welcome back this gentleman who was with us a couple of weeks ago. Ben Zaks is the COO of Fine Fettle, which operates three locales in the state, servicing medical patients and recreational users. A fourth is coming up. Hey, Ben, it's Paul again at WICC. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thank you. And just to be clear here, you have the three operations running now, and you have a fourth coming up. Tell the audience about that.
Yeah. So our three operations, as you noted, were medical and are now hybrid in Newington, Stamford, and Willimantic. And then on Friday at 9 a.m., we are opening our fourth location, which will be the state's only adult use location, only adult use only location. In addition, it's the first equity joint venture in the state, and that is opening at 91 Hale Road in Manchester. And so we are incredibly honored and excited to A, have that license type, but also to have done the work to get it open and, you know, increase the market size.
So, Ben, how tough is it to get these facilities open? Like you say, the pure retail facilities now and coming under the equity umbrella. Talk a little about that. What is that like?
Yeah, so it's a real process. So Connecticut's legislature sort of created three ways to get a license. The first was the conversion from medical to hybrid, which we did three times. The second way was winning in the lottery, which they gave out the initial lottery winners for all of the license types. And the third way were these equity joint ventures. Based on our number of licenses, we couldn't join the lottery. But these equity joint ventures are 50-50 partnerships between the current operating medical dispensaries and folks who qualify under where they grew up requirements as well as income requirements. And so we've got an amazing group of partners. And you know, once we had gotten those licenses approved, and all the various sort of paperwork that we need to do. The hardest part around Connecticut has been finding real estate because a lot of towns have said no to cannabis or put a moratorium in. And so we were, you know, fortunate and worked honestly hard enough to find Manchester and then go through everything to get it done and approved. The Social Equity Council approved our workforce development and social equity plan. And now we're ready to go and finally get this show on the road and, you know, increase more options for the adult use customer.
You talked to Ben about the social equity partners you got into business with for this new location, the first, I guess, in the state here coming up this Friday. Without giving names or definitive backgrounds, if you don't want to, who are some of these people? What are their stories and how did you get involved with them?
So ours is special. I think we're unique because we are a Connecticut-owned and operated business. And so our partners are people who we and our ownership team has known for a minimum of 20 years. One, Kennard Ray was my babysitter's best friend. And I, you know, babysat me when I was a kid. So I've known him, you know, since I was 12 and not to age myself. So 22 years, and Kennard grew up in Hartford. He was arrested in his earlier life on drug charges and, you know, has come out and really positioned and pushed his life in a way to help those getting out of prison be able to have the opportunity to vote and re-enter society. And so he was a perfect partner and somebody who is just incredibly smart and capable and well-connected and knows everyone and, you know, really comes at it with a keen eye. And then our other partners are also folks who we've known for a really long time. And we think that this is a special setup that Connecticut built to join these partnerships. And we think that the way that we set it up is really what the intent of the entire program is, to put great operators with folks who qualify and to create not just a business partnership, but have a long-term relationship to build an opportunity for, you know, long-term business and wealth.
Benjamin Zaks is the guest, the COO of Fine Fettle. Once again, three locations of Fine Fettle, hybrid locations, medical marijuana sales, and recreational retail sales, and a new location coming up this Friday, purely retail with an equity partnership as well. Ben, what's it been like in roughly the first month here? I know the first time we talked, I think it was on day one or so, or within that, and you said you looked out your window and saw beat-up pickup trucks parked next to Mercedes and BMWs, parked next to bicycles, parked next to family sedans. What's it been like since then?
The same, right? I think the consistency of cannabis as customer is the inconsistency, right? Whether it's age, anyone from 21 up to 100, whether it's, you know, what your socioeconomic background is, you know, race, religion, mm-hmm. gender, you know, everything. And so, you know, that we like to see. Connecticut sales, I think, have been solid, but not a huge boom, right? We are next to Massachusetts. We're next to Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. We're next to New York. All have legal programs. But, you know, we've seen thousands and thousands of new customers coming into the market. In our personal stores, we're seeing about 70 to 75% of our sales being adult use versus, you know, medical. Mm-hmm. So we've been able to increase our business, which is great. You know, there have been some growing pains just figuring out operations, you know, getting the medical patients, you know, the products always that they need, you know, changing of SKUs, changing of edibles. But overall, I think, you know, we haven't had some of the huge issues that have happened in other states. And I think Connecticut has rolled this out in a positive way overall.
I know there's kind of got to be, Benjamin, a kind of a sweet spot here for taxes, because you're right, we are surrounded by New York, which is just getting online with one or two locations, Massachusetts, which has been online. And I would assume that, you know, marijuana retailing is kind of like, in a way, much like regular retailing, where you now have competitors and more, you know, more states coming online every day. And if somebody can save some money, they will drive.
Exactly. So, you know, it's also breaking of habit, right? Because cannabis has been legal and you know, it's existed before a legal market, as most people well know. And that just means that it's our job to ensure people have a great experience and that they can get the products that they want and desire. And so, you know, that habit comes from going to Massachusetts. That habit comes from, you know, however they used to get the product before, or Rhode Island. And, you know, that's okay. And part of what happens, though, in an evolving market, and this has happened in basically every state in the country, is over time, people become more comfortable and more understanding, and there becomes more competition and prices drop that help the consumer. And so we are really in the infancy. Right now, there are only 8 stores in the state open adult use. There were 7 on day one, and 8 has opened. There are still only the 4 producers who are by and large producing the same product. And so as more of these licenses come online, we think that that will ultimately be a good thing for the market and will help you know, get more people more comfortable or want to drive it. There's huge pockets of the state where physically there's not a dispensary for 20, 30 minutes. And so is somebody going to drive right now? I don't know. And so we think expansion is ultimately good.
You talked, Ben, about producers and suppliers. You're like any other business. I mean, my dad, we had a family grocery store, so we were, you know, beholden to suppliers to get us the products. As you said, there aren't that many suppliers. How has that been so far? I know there was some worry, correct me if I'm wrong, about one of the suppliers being on some shaky financial terms and the concern reflecting there to both the medical field and the retail. What's an update on that?
So overall, supply has not been any sort of issue. We have more product from a dollars perspective sitting in our vault in terms of inventory than we've ever had. Anyone who wants to come in and they want a product that we have, right, we have enough of it. The difference has been that, you know, Connecticut and Massachusetts, we have some of the strictest laws in the state around potency.
Yeah.
And so some flour is not available. Concentrates are not available. You know, the edible market has really only had three different products in it because the producers before all had bakeries, and now they're shifting to a gummy production line, which has taken their bakeries offline and added gummy production. And so the other thing is, you know, as these producers have come on board, they've streamlined the number of products they're making. So we used to have a certain strain in first cut, second cut, select grind, a pre-roll pack sold in 3.5 grams, sold in 7, 14, 28 grams. And now, because a customer can only buy 7 grams total on the adult use side, the producers have streamlined their operations to focus on as many sort of variety of strains, but specifying in the products. And so our menu, especially for our medical patients' expectations, has shrunk. But overall, there is definitely enough product in the state. As more operators with these new license sites come online, we expect to see, you know, drinks and different manufactured products, but it's going to take time to get there. Like, we have to remember, Massachusetts has been doing this since 2018. They're 5-6 years in, and it took 4 or 5 years to get drinks going. You know, it took time to get 100 growers in the state there, and we have 4. So, you know, it's going to grow over time, and I think anyone who sort of expected that it was just going to be everything everyone wanted day one hasn't sort of looked at the realities of what a market progression is. And that's okay. But, you know, it's our job as a retailer to educate the customer and consumer of what is coming and what's happened.
Ben, thank you. Benjamin Zacks, return visit from Ben. He's the COO of Fine Fettle. 3 locations open, another one coming on Friday, and this one is going to be a straight retail location, not medically involved, and also will involve someone under the state's equity program as well. Ben, be good. Take care, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
The controversy continues over the video app that may be on your phone, on the phone of your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, the kids next door. A lot of finger pointing really now from both sides of Congress saying, hey, maybe we should completely ban the use of TikTok in the U.S. A lot of experts say any keystrokes that go into TikTok go directly to the Chinese Communist Party. Now, Governor Lamont here in Connecticut is not going as far as some other governors have already gone, and that is barring TikTok from some state devices. Some governors have. There's a bill in the state legislature to do that. There are even some large universities telling their students, hey, we recommend this not be on your phone. And joining us right now is John Powers, Dr. John Powers. He's director of the Graduate Interactive Media and Communications Program at Quinnipiac University to talk about this. And we'll see, is this overblown or is this an ongoing threat here as more members of Congress are starting to really join hands on this? John, hi, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on today.
No problem, John, because listen, whether people use TikTok or not, they probably know somebody who does, and politicians use it, businesses use it now. But, John, what is the general problem with TikTok or these suspicions? Some people say no. ByteDance says who? Us? No, we would never do that. But yet you have, I guess, John, starting to see some rare agreement among lawmakers on this.
That is true. And as we all know, TikTok is a wildly popular social media platform, almost 2 billion users around the world. So it's rivaling Facebook, Instagram, you know, the big ones in the social media arena. And the danger here is that there really are two concerns. One is the surveillance issue that you brought up in your intro for sure. And the other, which is talked about much less, is the manipulation of the algorithm, where TikTok is using artificial intelligence in a way to really manipulate the information, the videos that end up in our feeds, and so forth. And that becomes even a much more long-term but dangerous issue for sure.
And John, we are seeing, as I mentioned, and it's been in the news and now popping up on the major channels too, there are some states that by decree, there are some governors, mainly Republican states right now, there are some governors saying, hey, if a private person wants to use this, that's fine. We cannot allow this on government-issued devices. We're not talking about private devices, but cell phones, laptops, tablets issued by state governments.
And you know, it's interesting that it's come to that. It does put our political leaders in a difficult position, because any mention of limiting free speech or banning something like this, even on government devices, you know, raises the alarm bells with our First Amendment rights. But TikTok does have some very dangerous situations regarding some surveillance. As you mentioned, it has the ability to register our keystrokes as we type things in. It does also, you know, it's very vulnerable to hackers, identity theft because of its vulnerabilities. It also, by using its in-app browser, anything that you put in to make a purchase with a credit card, you know, any personal information is wide open and vulnerable to folks. Obviously, from the ByteDance and the you know, potentially the Chinese government, but also to hackers and others who we certainly wouldn't want to have that information.
Couple of more minutes talking to Quinnipiac University Associate Professor Dr. John Powers on the state of Connecticut possibly stopping the use of TikTok on state-issued digital devices. There's, I guess, a bill floating around in Hartford on that. John, you have any personal feelings on this? You think now, there was a story on, I think, Reuters a couple of weeks ago, John, that I guess the governor did look into this, but the FBI and other people didn't give him what he thought was good enough data as to make a decision on this. So do you think this eventually gets canned on state devices or not?
That's a great question. And as I mentioned earlier, it puts our political leaders in a very, very difficult situation because TikTok is such a popular device. And again, I think even if this won't affect most people simply because they're not part of using a state-owned device, it's still going to not be a more popular legislative action if they do go ahead with that. So it is interesting, I think, that several states have already done this, and the entire nation of India did this, banned TikTok as a whole for these very same reasons. There certainly are security vulnerabilities, and so maybe there's some sort of compromise where certain devices that are involved in financial records or more confidential information, human resources, that sort of thing, TikTok is removed from their devices and maybe not others. But I do think this is something that's going to have to be dealt with eventually.
Now, they're supposedly owned by this quote-unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, John, independent company called ByteDance, but pretty much everybody on both sides of the aisle kind of laughs at that, John, right? Because nobody's really independent in China from Xi Jinping and his rulers, are they?
That's really the point, is it is considered a separate private company. It's not owned directly by the Chinese Communist Party or the Chinese government, but certainly the Chinese Communist Party has direct influence over ByteDance and TikTok, and so that's where some of the concern comes from. As I mentioned earlier, the second issue of algorithmic manipulation is really, to me, as concerning, if not more concerning, with how that impacts the mental health and the zeal of younger people and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you know, John, it's interesting, and I was thinking about this last night, knowing you were coming on today. Look, we're all for free speech. I'm in a free speech business here, doing shows like this for the better part of 30 years, being a reporter before that. But it does set up, John, does it not, this interesting line of when do you still want to maintain free speech yet not give an open door to a country, an entity, a group, even most progressives would say or would have to say on the face of it, has become a very aggressive person or aggressive player, I should say, on the world stage, at least with their rhetoric toward the U.S. I mean, freedom of speech is one thing, but I would think there have to be limits to that as well. You don't just let anybody walk into your house.
You make some excellent points, and I think those are very valid concerns. I mean, if you look at how TikTok is exported to the rest of the world from China, it's this open artificial intelligence that is, manipulating the algorithm to send videos that will keep us coming back for more. And, you know, there's even concern about some of the polarization that it causes and all that sort of thing, let alone, God forbid, there's ever some sort of conflict with Taiwan and how TikTok can be used to manipulate opinions related to that. But in China, where TikTok also is very popular, it features more educational content. It's it's limited for kids under 14. It shuts down at 10 o'clock at night. And again, I'm not advocating for those things here in the United States, but it's different in China than it is here. And it's interesting to kind of compare the two.
All right, John, thanks. We'll see how this all shakes out. Quinnipiac University Associate Professor Dr. John Powers. What will the state of Connecticut do? Governor Ned Lamont says nothing for the time being, but we'll keep an eye on this. John, thanks. Good to talk with you. We'll hook up down the road. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Dr. John Powers there. There you go. There you go, folks. And I know I do a lot on this topic, but you have to realize, even if it's not on your phone or you saw it was on your phone and you deleted it, but if you have a grandson or a granddaughter or nieces or nephews of a certain age, listen, they're probably using this app, which you know, a coalition of right and left now in Washington are saying, yeah, this is pretty much one thing we can agree on. This is not good. And our computer experts have said that this has some pretty nefarious possibilities here. But yet we walk on eggshells sometimes. You know, everybody wags their finger at Russia, as they should. But a lot of times when you walk, when you talk about stuff connected to China, people sit back and they say, whoa, the economy, all the jobs, oh, we're tied up too economically there. So it becomes the eggshell tap dance.